When jazz composer and conductor Lawrence Butch Morris died a year ago this month, we lost a true musical innovator, the inventor of conduction, his term for what he described as conducted improvisation. He employed large ensembles of jazz and classical musicians, vocalists, turntablists, even dancers and performance artists, established a spontaneous musical theme, and then directed them through his own vocabulary of signals and gestures to create something new and unique. Mr. Morris's longtime friend and collaborator, Henry Threadgill, met him in the mid-1970s. And this Saturday, Mr. Threadgill will premiere Old Locks and Irregular Verbs, his original work in remembrance of Butch Morris. The wonderful pianist Jason Moran will be a member of the ensemble, and both he and Henry Threadgill join us now to fill us in on what to expect during the two performances of the work at Judson Church as part of the New York City Winter Jazz Fest. Welcome to our show.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And we actually were listening to a composition of yours, Tomorrow's Sunny. That's what we opened with. But that's not what you'll be performing?
I'm sorry?
That's not what you'll be performing on.
No, this is a new ensemble I'm premiering. I'm premiering the new composition, but I'm also premiering a new ensemble called Double Up. And that's with two pianos, tuba, cello, two alto saxophones, and trap drums. And that's with Jason and David Baez on piano, Roman Field and Curtis McDonald on alto saxophones, Jose Davila on tuba, and Christopher Hoffman, cello, and Craig Windrip is the trap drummer.
Now, a tuba player rather than a
Jose
bass player?
Jose Davila, right.
He plays. That's going back to the roots of jazz.
I'm sorry?
Having a tuba player play the bass line is going back to the very beginnings of jazz.
Yeah, I guess so.
Will this piece be in any way like the sort of thing that Butch Morris composed?
I don't know. It's possible. Music is always like some other music in some kind of way. But it's not. I didn't write this piece to. It's a remembrance piece.
Well, Jason, yeah,
it's okay. Really not something where I'm trying to recapture what Butch was doing. It's a remembrance of something that I wrote for a friend that I no longer have access to.
Jason, Butch Morris's conducted improvisation or conductions seem almost like an oxymoron. How did his work differ from the jazz of his time? Or was this similar in some ways to the sorts of things that Charlie Mingus would do?
Well, I don't know. You know, like I think the first time I saw Butch was actually on a double bill with Henry Threadgill up at Harlem Stage up in Harlem. And but there's something, you know, uniquely different from watching and then also listening to what Butch is able to create with an ensemble of varying styles of players. You know, I had a lunch with him. What's the restaurant in Grand Central Station where they serve oysters?
The Oyster Bar,
right? So he likes oysters. So he said, come meet me some oysters. And he said, he put his left hand down on the counter and said, now, composed music, written music is over here. And he put his right hand down and he said, and improvisation is over here. And he says, I want to know what's in the middle. And that's a very, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to get up from the table now because that's quite a challenge to try to.
Well, you're improvising on the composed music.
But you know, sometimes when we play with our eyes closed, and Butch ain't gonna let you play with your eyes closed. You have to watch him, and you have to watch the conductor and follow the signals. So it's a very different kind of process that I've watched people have with.
Although many jazz leaders give signals, they nod their head, or they give you the downbeat at least, or. I often know when somebody's ready to end a solo simply because they've sent off some kind of a visual signal. But this was different?
This is very different. You know, I did not have the fortune of ever being in one of those ensembles, but I had lots of friends who had, and having them learn the signals, because these aren't normal signals that you anticipate, you know. These hand signals he had, which looked like, I don't know, looked like a person who's directing aircraft, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
So did you have to learn those signals, Henry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the players had to learn all those gestures. I mean, the same way in a classical orchestra, the conductor's using a language. He's using a visual language that the players understand. Butch created another language that encompassed a lot of that, but something that was more that was going to improvisation. That was something new. I mean, you got to remember, it was people like Lucas Foss that first started down this road, you know, and Butch at first picked up his information there, I think.
What they used to call third stream music, which was something between classical music and jazz?
Yeah, third stream music, but it's still quite different from what he was doing. Creating improvisation, the amount, a whole concert, 45 minutes, 60 minutes of control improvisation that he's in charge of, you know.
Well, I'd imagine, considering the wide range of musicians and their backgrounds, that this would create a certain amount of tension.
Yeah.
Not everybody's on the same page.
Well, yeah, they might not be on the same page, but you have to, like, that's what can destroy one of these kind of performances. You have to get players that are, you know, willing to really cooperate, you know, because that was one of his big problems sometime, you know, all around the world. I mean, you know, in Turkey and Korea and different places and Paris, musicians that just wouldn't comply, you know, wanted to do their thing rather than become part of the big picture.
But he wanted to play with all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he himself played the cornet, an instrument that pretty much was abandoned when Louis Armstrong switched over to the trumpet in the early days of jazz. That seems rather unconventional again, especially for somebody who was writing a music that would generally be described as avant-garde.
Oh, yeah. I think people are looking for sounds, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, where it comes from is, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, Henry has this instrument he made called a hubcaphone. Is it a hubcaphone? You know,
right. Like
hubcaps, you know, that then a drummer is now able to play as a percussion instrument, you know.
That's where my hubcap went.
And, you know, like this, I don't know this, but I think people and how they find sounds. So Sidney Bechet playing soprano, you know, like they find the one that is the one for them. You know, it's always interesting finding how people like Henry, how he finds the alto saxophone, or how I found the piano, and how they then find their voice in that instrument. That's like quite a process to go through.
It is.
Well, he played, Butch played a number of instruments.
Yeah, but he played cornet. He was a very fine cornet player. He had a very personal sound.
Did he play while he was doing all of these other
things? No, he stopped. You know, at one point he stopped and just concentrated on that, you know, because he found he couldn't really do both.
Well, the cornet is one of the hardest instruments to play because it's all based on embouchure, isn't it?
You know, I prefer the cornet over the trumpet myself.
Really?
Yeah, I would always call on the cornet. It's the quality of the sound on the cornet, you know.
And Henry is specific about sound. I mean, when I was, my father had a lot of his records, and I just remember the day he left on my desk a tape of Too Much Sugar for a Dime, this great recording of Henry's. And I put it on, and it was unlike any of the things I'd ever been listening to. So once I moved up to New York and started seeing many of Henry's groups playing, it was like, this is the only place that you could go hear that collection of instruments move in that kind of way. And that kind of singular sound is what makes people flock to a city like this.
My guests are Jason Moran and Henry Threadgill. We are talking about, among other things, the New York City Winter Jazz Fest, which is at Judson Church. They'll be performing a number of compositions by Mr. Threadgill, including Old Locks and Irregular Verbs, which was composed in remembrance of Lawrence D. Butch Morris, a pretty great composer in his own right. Morris brought together all of these different kinds of musicians. In an interview, he once said, whether he considered his work jazz, I'm paraphrasing here, "In my work, I bring spontaneity, combustion, I bring ignition, motivation. These are all things involved in jazz."
Right. Involved, right. Yeah.
But he was avoiding the question. Would you call it jazz? Well, you played with him, Henry. You played with him in jazz groups.
I think labels now have lost most of their meanings in terms of music. I grew up, there was such a thing as pop music. There's no longer that category of pop music. I can name all of the people, you know, the Burt Bacharachs and all the people, Johnny Mathis, that sang pop music. There's no such thing as pop music anymore. The boundaries of what they call jazz, everything can go up under that now. So that's why I think Butch and myself would avoid using these kind of labels. It's just more creative music, you know.
Well, did jazz have to move in other directions? Because at a certain point, it looked like it was going to become a museum music.
Oof.
Well, it all depends on what you...
You say woof. You've never read those articles, those complaints. You've never heard about that, right, Jason?
What do you mean that it was going to move into a museum music?
Well, that at a certain point, probably the death of John Coltrane, the music became rather rigidified, and people playing within a certain, you know, like nothing was going to change. You were not going to have another Charlie Parker. You weren't going to have another John Coltrane or Sonny Rollins.
Oh, I don't know about that, because the music did change right there.
Well, we wound up with another Jason Moran, for example.
With Coltrane, when we lost, that's when things start to move. I'm from Chicago. I'm with the AECM. We certainly went in a whole new direction, I think, you know. The Chicago School of Musicians, we completely broke free of tradition.
And then you became best known as a member of the trio Air.
I'm sorry?
You became pretty well known when you were with that trio Air.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Art Ensemble of Chicago, Anthony Braxton, Wardala Leo Smith, it was Leroy Jenkins. I think that, you know, having Sun Ra come from out of our environment, Phil Coran and Moohaw Richard Abrams, we had a long tradition of people that were trying to stretch the boundaries of music. And with the advent of Ornette Coleman and Coltrane and Cecil Taylor, when you put those three together, we had enough information to
keep on going,
you see.
We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with more from Henry Threadgill and Jason Moran. Stay with us. Just a little excerpt from Henry Threadgill's So Pleased, No Clue. Henry, how much of that is composed and how much of that is improvised?
What we just heard?
Yeah.
That was all composed, but there's a way, there's composed music that you can play in an improvised way. And oftentimes, that's what I aim to accomplish in my rehearsals with Zewitt.
You want the musicians to personalize the
written
music?
Yeah, we personalize it, exactly. You know. Because, see, something has to be brought in some form. You have to bring things in some form. But that's just the beginning. I'm not looking to hear it the way I bring it in. You know.
And then when would the saxophone player wind up doing something on his own, although I assume that wouldn't be using chord changes as it used to be in jazz.
I don't know if I understand you.
Well, what would the improvisation be based on?
Oh, I have a system, of an intervallic system that we use for reference. The intervallic system I use is in addition to everything else that you know personally.
So, Jason, if you're playing with different people like Henry or Butch Morris, you have to learn all these new systems?
This is the charm. This is why I think I want to be a musician, is to understand how other people's processes of composition and improvisation. And so there is a different method of looking for the goal. And to learn the language is it's challenging, just like it is learning an actual spoken language. But what Henry does allow is that you can still have your slang when you speak in his music. And also it's a collective kind of improvisation that's really happening within the group too. We're following the skeleton.
Although you're also in the piece that is dedicated to Butch Morris, you're playing with another pianist.
Yeah, a great pianist.
You got to get out of each other's ways.
Yeah. But I spend a lot of my life playing with pianists. I'll play with pianist Robert Glasper tomorrow at Town Hall. I play with David. I play with Mary McPartland, Jackie Byard, Uri Kane. I play with a lot of pianists. That's kind of actually how I learned, was playing two pianos all of the time. And you have to learn space. I mean, you have to learn space in any ensemble you work in. But with two pianos, you have to learn when to shut up and let stuff breathe. I remember when I would talk to Threadgill about pianos, he's like, well, they want to just play all the time. And he told this story about being in this funk group when he played saxophone. I don't know why I'm telling this story. Henry's right here. but it was poignant for me. But he said, this group, this funk group before Earth, Wind & Fire. What was the name of the group? Do you remember?
The
Pharaohs, right? Mm-hmm. So they hire Henry, but not to play saxophone. They give him a frying pan. And they say, get back in the rhythm section and just play in there for a while.
So when you can really learn how to play rhythm on a frying pan, then maybe you can play the saxophone.
That's awesome, Yeah. And for me, that was the lesson in actually how to comp, to accompany another saxophonist or somebody solo, is not to think like, okay, I should use all of this, but you have to be thinking rhythmically and motion, and response.
Jazz is often like a conversation, isn't it? And so you have to be listening to other people, so that you all understand where you're going. And there's often the equivalent of, call and response, or picking up on a phrase that somebody else did and moving on with it. Something that only can occur if you're really listening to the other musicians.
Yeah. It's a communication. It's a high level of communication that the artists have to get themselves involved in. And my idea at the present is to have a type of music that a person cannot, they don't have to fall back on the cymbals of traditional music and let that be their guide in what they play. I know that they know a number of things, but if you put up a new format for them to play in, then they can tend to be a little bit more spontaneous. They can play something that they might not play under normal circumstances. When you remove the old symbols, all of the information is in their mind, so it's part of their vocabulary, but they don't reference it. So,
you're taking away their comfort zone.
The superior brain takes over. See, the superior musical intellect will take over.
Is that part of the excitement, playing on the edge?
It is. I mean, that's how I was nurtured, I think, through musicians from the AACM, and I would consider myself a grandson of the AACM in a way, because they think about composition and improvisation as two spaces, and then you have to learn how to be a navigator.
Now, both Henry, both you and Butch served in Vietnam.
Right.
And you're pretty close in age.
Yeah.
Did you know each other a long time before you actually wound up performing together?
No. We probably used to walk past each other about once a week and didn't know it, because Butch was a medic in Pleiku in the Central Highlands, and I was in the 4th Infantry Division, and that was the main city that you would go into where the hospital was, where he worked out of. Well,
neither of you were working as musicians?
I was a musician, but I was in the infantry. It's, you know, the Army is a funny thing. You say, you're a doctor. What kind of doctor are you? I'm an infantry doctor. What kind of cook are you? I'm an infantry cook. So that means anytime they get ready, they can pull the infantry card. See? But the buses and the vehicles would pull up to come into the city in front of the hospital. And he was constantly coming and going out of that, out of the main med center right there, you know. So I used to come in there quite frequently, and we probably used to just walk past each other and didn't even know it at the time.
And then later you did play together.
We, we met up in New York, you know.
Playing with David Murray?
Yeah.
Now, Jason, you're going to be in this ensemble, but are you going to be doing other things as part of the festival?
Tomorrow we'll kick off a celebration for Blue Note Records' 75th anniversary with my Houston homeboy, Robert Glasper, a fellow pianist. We're playing two pianos, starting like the very first Blue Note record recording is Albert Ammons and Meat Lux Lewis playing Boogie Woogie Blues piano. So we're using that as our starting point for tomorrow's concert at Town Hall.
We once had Alfred Lion on the show.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, that's what we're up to.
So, but what's happening with jazz recording these days? Are there any labels that are still doing the kind of thing that Blue Note and Riverside used to do?
Well, Pi is, clearly. Henry is with Pi Records. They make fabulous records. You know, and also there's so much coming out, you know, Thirsty Ears making great records. You know, there's lots of great musicians, and people are finding their own avenues. Sometimes it's not necessarily through that mainstream pipeline anymore, but the music is out there, definitely.
Well, we have details on the whole festival on our show page at WNYC.org. But if you want to know about the performance of Henry Threadgill's Old Locks and Irregular Verbs in remembrance of Lawrence D. Butch Morris, it's at the Judson Church on Saturday, January 11th at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. And I want to thank both of you so much for being on our show today to talk about it and jazz and where things are going. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Okay, well, what else do I want to tell you about? Well, I'm going to go to Mexico tomorrow, and we're going to have a guest host.